Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is, mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this? Somebody shoots your family member. So, of course, you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, they see somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up. We got to go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
This is the revolution of premeditated scheme. Introducing drugs on crack to us ghetto teens. Got along for born niggas now. Play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless. With violent thoughts, I'm hopeless. Got the devil petrified, hiding from my hope to focus. And so I learn to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside of paradise. Thugged out and drug dealers from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit thick, we block hits. When I block stick, all hell, I don't bear wrath. The apocalypse, forever ghetto necessary. Picture food stamps, outlaw thug niggas never left the food
stamps. I'm a real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block the back.
DJ
from
Slam.
My
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, but you didn't see the war as the prophecy. Survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets in time, yeah, any devil petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hell bound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary jail bound. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulu Shakur up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me. The struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something, it was that tough. All right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
Real life, from front to back. Put my niggas in the world to rock the rack. Where my soldiers are at? Where my soldiers are at? Where the fuck my soldiers at? Where my soldiers are at? We got the real life, from front to back. Put my niggas in the world to rock the rack. Where my soldiers are at? Where my soldiers are at? Where the fuck my soldiers at? Where my soldiers are at? Come on.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see today. You hear him where it hurts.
Starring Gary
Larry Dorden from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free land. Revolutionary greeting. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakir. Our aim and goal at Georgia University is to train for the whole pre-industrial slave complex, which is the prison of the big institution of learning through educational means, through programs such as the Market Garbage Study Group, which is a program that was designed by brothers from the inside and the weather to the outside to use to incorporate the learning, but used to incorporate the aspects of revolutionary learning, political education, and historical means to transform the individual from the crew mentality to a revolution mentality. Before I bring in a guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On May the 16th, 1966, the SNCC, which is Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, established their We Want Black Power chant in Greenwood, Mississippi. May the 17th, 1881, President Garfield named Frederick Douglass Recorder of Deeds for District of Columbia. Frederick McKinley Jones, black inventor born in 1893, one of the most prolific inventors ever, patented more than 60 inventions, best known for automatic refrigeration system for long-haul trucks and railroad cars. Also developed a device with adapted silent movement projectors to use sound. In 1909, white firemen on Georgia Railroad struck to protest the hiring of blacks. 1915, National Baptist Convention Charter. 1954, U.S. Supreme Court and landmark Brown v. Board education decision declared segregation in public school unconstitutional. The unanimous decision, read by Chief Justice Earl B. Warren, doomed legal segregation in America. In 1957, the Prairie Pilgrimage, the biggest civil rights demonstration to date, were held in Washington. In 1980, from the 17th to the 19th, a major race riot occurred in Miami, Florida. 14 persons were killed and more than 300 were injured. In 1980, a ophthalmologist and inventor, Dr. Patricia E. Bell, patents a device that efficiently removes cataracts with laser technology. On May the 18th, 1848, William A. Liederdorf, one of the founding fathers of San Francisco, died in San Francisco at the age of 38. In 1918, Mary Turner was lynched in Brooks County, Georgia for protesting the lynching of her husband. At the time she was lynched, Walter White wrote, Mary Turner was in her 8th month of pregnancy. Her ankle was tied together, and she was hung to the tree, head downward. Gasoline and oil from the automobile were thrown on her clothing, and while she withered in agony, and the mob howled in glee. A match was applied, and her clothes burned from her person. When this had been done, and while she was yet alive, a knife was taken, and the woman's abdomen was cut open. The unborn baby falling from her womb to the ground. The infant, prematurely born, gave 2 feeble cries, and then his head was crushed by a member of the mob with his heel. Hundreds of bullets were then fired into the body of the woman, now mercifully dead, and the work was over. That's fucked up. 1955, Mary McLeod Bethune, educator and civil rights leader, died in Daytona Beach, Florida at the age of 79. Also, I missed the date. 1896, U.S. Supreme Court separate but equal decision in Pleasant versus Ferguson on that date upheld state-imposed Jim Crow laws. On today's date, in 1881, Blanche Kelso Bruce appointed Register of Treasurer by President Garfield. In 1890, Ho Chi Minh was born. In 1921, Yuri Kochiyama was born. In 1925, we witnessed the birth of Malcolm X, who was a man of the people, a freedom fighter, the father of the Republic, the father of New Africa, a RAM member, a pan-African revolutionist, a community organizer, a worldwide freedom fighter. In 1930, Laura Hansberry, a playwright, was born. In 1965, Patricia R. Harris, named Ambassador to Luxembourg. She was the first black woman ambassador. In 1974, from the 19th through the 27th, approximately 500 delegates and observers, almost half of them from America, attended the 6th Pan-African Congress in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. In 1993, Rita Dole became the first black named poet laureate of the United States. On May the 20th, George Sampson received a patent for the clothes dryer, 1892. In 1958, Robert N.C. Nix elected to Congress. In 1961, a mob attacked Freedom Rides in Montgomery. Also in 1961, Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy dispatched 400 U.S. Marshals to Montgomery to keep order in Freedom Riders controversy. 1996, political prisoner Abdul Haq released from prison. May the 21st, Fats Waller, jazz piano, was born in 1904. 1961, Governor Patterson declared martial law in Montgomery and called out National Guard. In 1970, National Guard mobilized to quell disturbances at Ohio State University. Black and white students demanded an end to ROTC programs and the admission of additional black students. In 1975, Lowell Dover Perry, confirmed chairman of the Equal Opportunity, confirmed chairman of the Equal Employment and Opportunity Commission, the EECOC. On May the 22nd, 1856, Senator Charles Sumner, militant anti-slavery advocate from Massachusetts, attacked and beat senseless on the Senate floor by Representative Preston S. Brooks from South Carolina, who objected to Sumner's crime against Kansas speech of May the 19th through the 20th. 1863, the War Department started the Bureau of Colored Troops and launched an aggressive campaign for recruitment of black soldiers. Sun Ra, legendary jazz composer, band leader, piano and synthesizer player, poet and philosopher, known for his experimental music, cosmic philosophy, prolific output and theatrical performance, born in 1922. 1948, poet Clyde McKay died in Chicago at the age of 58. 1959, Brigadier General Benjamin O. Davis Jr., promoted to Major General. 1961, the Attorney General ordered 200 additional U.S. Marshals to Montgomery. 1967, Langston Hughes, the poet laureate of the Negro race, died in New York City at the age of 67. You know, there's a lot of more events that happened in history during the week, but those are just a few, just to illuminate your mind. All I said, free land, those identified with land, revolutionary ingredients, free out of political prisoner, a prisoner of war, free out of new African political prisoner of war, free out of captive citizens of the new African nation. I'd like to thank everybody who currently educating themselves in a respected area, it would be at a college, being in the community, being in their homes, who are currently educating themselves and doing work and being progressive in their community, and whether it's their environment, whether it's their family. And I thank everybody who's been listening to our broadcast since 2014. And I thank all the people who've been following us, who've been following and have been here from GJU in regards to education, political development, and whether it's the development itself, be it from the inside as a prisoner or being on the outside of the street, and all the ones who don't work with us. Without all ado, I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Baba Messiah Hosey and Baba G2 Sadiq. How y'all brother doing tonight?
All right, bro. To be on the show once again, and willing to share whatever information that me and Brother Sire can share with your audience.
True indeed. First, I'll thank both of you for coming to our platform and sharing these knowledge and understanding. Thank you both for y'all long commitment to the movement, y'all long commitment to free our political prisoners, the long commitment, you know what I'm saying, to free the land, as well as leave something tangible for us younger people such as myself, younger people behind me to gravitate and latch on to and move forward. I also want to thank you for the work that y'all did in the past, the present, as well as in the future. You know,
First of all, how y'all brother doing, though? How everybody feel?
kind of faded out for you.
Either I lost you or you are.
Okay. I was saying, how y'all really feeling tonight? How y'all feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good.
Okay. Okay. What do you say, Bob? I can't hear you. Okay. I asked a question, right? You know, I'm going to ask a question, and both of y'all can get, both of y'all can give y'all answer to the same question. My first question is, why are some of our elders, comrades, and loved ones forgotten about as new African political prisoners and black political prisoners? And who are some of these individuals?
Can you repeat the first part of the question?
Okay. I said, why are some of our elders, comrades, and loved ones forgotten about as new African political prisoners and black political prisoners?
And this isn't the full answer, but I wanted to say this in the beginning. They're not forgotten about by their families or people close to them. So, I mean, like, maybe the question, like, you know, is, if whatever passes for a movement might have forgot about them, which might be a slightly different thing. But to me, I mean, it doesn't reflect good on the movement. And I think even when that happens, a lot of times it's because, like, we haven't made those connections. You know, we don't really talk. Not, this isn't across the board, but in a lot of cases, people themselves have gotten away from really recognizing the continuity of a struggle. It's like some folks think that some stuff just happened today, or they grab onto a few names, and those names represent the whole struggle to them. And after a while, it just becomes a ongoing, like, cycle. People grab onto a few names and forget about the rest of the struggle, and those folks who might identify with struggle. But families don't forget them. Not close family.
You know, this question is interesting. I actually had a conversation with Bruce Richards, who is from organizing a memorial zero who met who was.
You're going in and out, Bob. I can't hear you. You're going in and out.
Okay. This is probably the phone. I don't have any control over that. But I'll try to speak directly into the mic.
Okay.
I had a conversation this morning with Bruce Richard, who's one of the original Panthers from Southern California. And we're in the process of organizing a memorial for Romaine Chip Fitzgerald, who had been incarcerated for the past 51 years in prison and recently made a transition as a result of some health issues for his generation. And unfortunately, the state refused to let him go. And he suffered a stroke and with the ancestors now. And that subject came up in terms of those that we were talking about, the local prisoners, and those that have been forgotten about. And we're hoping that this tribute to Chip will have to revitalize that movement where the general public or the African community, if you will, begin to recognize the need to support all those that have made contributions to this movement. And as a result of that, either they were locked up or they stood up during their confinement, and took a stance against oppression, the tyranny existing in this country, that they recognize. There's numerous of them that have been warehoused for the past 30, 40 years, and a lot of it has to do with education. It has to do with exposure. And I think that when we begin to look at particularly with the things that we're seeing today, a revived interest in addressing abuse, police killings, the abuse by the system, and create new prisons of war, that people recognize that we need to begin to support those. So, and as just is need to be and looking at those that have been warehoused and getting behind and supporting the liberation.
Indeed, true indeed.
Can I just say something else a little bit related to that somewhat?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. One of the things is like when Brother G2 was mentioned, talking, like one of the things he mentioned is like the conversation that he would have had, and I'm guessing that's with somebody that was on the West Coast. Okay. Well, one of the things I think about a lot of times is that in local areas, in some areas, it's like people know, because something else he had said was like, you know, recognize those folks who made a contribution to the struggle. In local areas, people may know who did what. But again, sometimes we kind of put them to the side when we talk about on a big scale. So it's like newer folks coming along, they identify maybe with people's names they hear, but they walk right by or they don't recognize those folks that came from their community who are who are inside because of what their involvement in the struggle. Whether it was on that, you know, what could be considered to be like, you know, organizing or political prisoners work set up, whatever, or even some of those who functioned on another level. And I think we need to, and that would be part of us actually understanding our history and the history of struggle here, recognizing those people more. In some areas, it has a whole lot to do with who you have, like, as your above-ground support. If you do, what kind of word they get out. You know, because we got people throughout this country that, again, like I said, local people may know, but others don't. And I know, like, was just a fillet had talked about it, because, you know, they also having to recharge genocide march and demonstration this at the end of this year. And one of the things she had mentioned, like on one of their calls earlier this year, was that in some areas, like there's strong support networks, so they're going to raise the people from their area. They're not intending to exclude other folks, but if they don't know them, they can. And I actually thought that was a good idea, and folks maybe should look at that a little bit more. And there's certain areas of this country, like when you know folks, if you don't raise them, then other people ain't gonna hear them. But she did say, you know, in their organizing effort, they really need people to raise those people from their areas.
True indeed, true indeed. In regards to that question I asked, I was saying, in regards to that first question, and who are some of these individuals that have been forgotten by the movement? Who are some of the individuals, so to speak?
I think, as Masai mentioned, there are several people who are household names that we hear about. Tamir Al-Amin, but the people, the African. I can only really speak to in California.
Look, I can't tell if like you still speaking?
Yeah, it's Conrad having phone issues, man. He was speaking good at one time, but might be a location or whatever. He said it might be the phone, it might be the location. You know what I'm saying? He was speaking good at one time, then it started breaking up.
Well, two names I'm going to mention, and I'm going to mention now, and I'll get back later. I could say three, but two in particular. One of them would be, and I use the name most folks, or many folks, is familiar with, Jeff Ford. You know, like a lot of folks, a lot of folks don't know, like, the contribution that he and actually I'm part of that movement, you know, that's headed by him, and I've been with him for over 25 years, even though when I talk about certain work or do certain work, folks tend to identify with other formations and groups. But, of course, anything I do is all good. This is ultimately from Allah, but in terms of organizational structure, that's part of the structure I'm on. And he's actually been locked down in Florence for one of the longest held prisoners in Florence, Colorado, and super restrictive. I mean, even just now, having a call not long ago, one of the lawyers that represents him on certain things and communication thing is still, like, extremely bad. We have to be extremely cautious about words we say. Anything we say can lead to a further restriction on communications. And even though, you know, like a lot of people have this thing where, like, Florence, the way the U.S. government puts it is Florence is for the worst of the worst, when in fact what they actually say is it is for those folks who might have certain amount of influence within the U.S., within the system, which is why they're actually there. He doesn't have a disciplinary record, but again, he does have a long history of involvement in the struggle for justice and freedom for people, love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. We think that people need to really look at that history and step up work to, at the very least, get his conditions of confinement improved. But if you look back, he's been involved in struggles around supporting the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King, aiding the efforts of unions or black workers in Chicago to get adequate representation. And a lot of patrols that helped to cut down on antisocial behavior in our neighborhoods. And as people have pointed out before, you know, he was kind of cool when they invited him to the White House, but when he didn't feel like accepting it, when he was somebody that couldn't be bought off, that way he definitely became, you know, somebody on their list. In the current charge, one of the charges they actually have on there is for supposedly attempting to commit a terrorist act for Libya while he was inside. And again, you know, contact with other folks isn't in and of itself like a crime, especially when others was doing it. And I won't go deeply into that right now, but again, contrary to what people think, you know, it's the terrorism charge. Another charge he got was given big time, was supposedly trying to defraud the U.S. government out of funds that he or his organization, in fact, a movement, didn't have direct control over those funds. Now those people who did have control, and nothing actually happened to him. So, again, I might get into that a little bit more, but we do think that at the very least people need to push his conditions because it's a major human rights violation to have anyone locked away like that for as long as he has been. You know, like I said, very restrictive communications ability, contact with other human beings. And at the same time, another person that's there is Larry Hoover, who's also has a petition right now trying to get transferred, at the very least, moved from that facility. And I know that they've also done growth and development, has done a lot of work in the community. And one of the things I might suggest that people might check out is was a document called Gang Up on Oppression that was put out by Spear and Shield Collective back in the early 90s. And it talked about, like, some of the COINTELPRO activities directed towards growth and development, Al Rukins, and the Vice Lords, among other groups. And Brother Bomani, this will relate to something else that I know you had asked before, which we haven't got to, and that's like the whole thing around security threat groups and security threat group management units. But they've both been around, been in influence among the longest held prisoners, and there's no justifiable reason for it. And, of course, another person I would mention is Malmeen Kabir, also known as Melvin Mays. He's currently in a medical facility in Rochester, Minnesota. He has COPD. He's in end-stage emphysema. And several times their own doctors have given him, like, a few years to live. But, of course, Allah knows best. And the brother's still here, but he's extremely weak. You know, he can't breathe but for a few minutes before he has to run and get the oxygen tank. He's no longer able to walk around and move on his own. Mal also has the terrorism charge. Now, one of the things about that is that Mal was out of the country because he did skip out when they wanted to lock him up the first time. But when he came back, it was because, like, he actually came back to aid and assist in the struggle here. So he's been in their hands since around 95. Brother was actually captured at my house, and at that time, we were still talking about ways to aid and assist the New African Independence Movement. So, again, it's a long-time involvement of him and others in actively engaged in struggle for our people. But, like I said, Malmeen is, he also has a petition for compassionate release. And his has been in since around September. You know, we don't know what the holdup is, so, we intend to step up some efforts in those regard. But those would be some of the people, like, people in the area may know, like, you know, what they've done. But a lot of times other people don't know. At the same time, I do know, and I get more upset with them, with some people, than they do. But there's folks who do know the work they've done for the community, work they've done on their behalf. And some of those people, like, I guess the pressure was too much for them because they kind of turned their back. You know, of course, there's a lot of folks who do good work and behind the scenes, because we do know that when you step up and try to assist some people, the system can be extremely hard, extremely hard. And in Chicago, they make it known that they will come for you. But those would be some of the people I would mention and probably will talk about a little bit more later.
Okay. G2, you can go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I hear you.
Okay. Yeah, as I said, those are household names that we hear a lot about. There are a lot that you don't hear about. And I don't know if it's coming. One of the reasons is because they're local, and they weren't local.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm hearing the music. Most of us that I was raised with, that I was raised around, him as the comrade, and when I say the comrade, I'm speaking of Comrade George Jackson, many of us came into prison, and I'll use myself as an example, with very limited knowledge about the prison movement, about the Black Liberation Movement. I had my brother who was murdered by the pigs back in 1985, who joined the Panthers in the 60s and was locked up from 67 to 71, tried to impart knowledge to me about the movement, the Black Liberation Movement, but I was too young to really understand what he was talking about. You know, I had an emotional connection with Black folks during that time period, and that's probably one of the things that prevented me from getting caught up. That and interest I took in working on cars kept me from getting caught up in the gang situation. But still, I had no knowledge of, or limited knowledge about the movement. I had heard about people like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, but it wasn't until I went to prison and I was embraced by those that were deeply involved in the prison movement and by proxy, the Black Liberation Movement, that where I got the real education from. That's when I began to study and read and learn about various formations in the community, various individuals, and many of us was doing that around the same time. We're talking about the mid to late 70s. And so those of us that took a stance against the oppression that we were subjected to or ensure that Africans were safe within those concentration camps came under attack. And as a result of that, many of us ended up in the hole, in the SHU program. You know, and for me, there was a window period in 77 where the laws changed and my tenor life was converted to a determined sentence, and I was parole in the early 80s. Most of them didn't have that opportunity. You know, it's a lot of them still warehouse that were based on their commitment to the movement. They just recently got some relief from solitary confinement in the mid 2000s, in 2014, 2015, as a result of a class action lawsuit. You don't hear about the your favorite Yapos, the Fatiyos, Abduls, Hashimas. These are brothers that have been continuously locked up, and not because of the crimes they committed or because of disruption within the belly of the beast. It's because of what they understand, what their political foundation is, what their commitment is. Those are the reasons they continue their things locked up. Prior to the incident that occurred, the Marin County rebellion that murdered the man child and two other warriors, William Christmas and James McClain, and injured Ruchia McGee, you never heard about, very little about those who became known as the San Quentin Six. You know, it was a result of those incidents. Well, there are San Quentin Six-like individuals who's had the same type of commitment that you don't hear about. So it's quite a few, you know, I mean, we can go across the country. Like I say, Governor Sy has stated, a lot of it is local. So if it's outside of California, unless you know them, you don't hear about the commitments and struggles and the pressure that they've had to deal with. You know, and so we got to raise up their names as well as those that need to be liberated from this beast's belly and start shutting down these institutions of oppression.
True indeed. My next question is, why does the state use the tactic of criminalizing our brother by the use of associating them with gangs?
That's when I talked about gang up on oppression before, and one of the things like that was mentioned is that like, you know, like even the use of that word gangs, it's like that was something like they started throwing, when they throw it at New African youth or other youth from oppressed communities, then there's only one way they have it out there. And that's like in a super negative way. But, you know, and people heard this before. It's like when they used to talk about the little young white kids out there was their gang and it was so-and-so, and it took on a whole different connotation, you know. Even if they did little stuff, it would just look like, you know, like just youth growing up and playing. They throw it on our people in such a way where, like, you know, it's like, And just because people band together, so they get us conditioned to think like banding together in and of itself is a negative thing. So from that, it's like we see we like people, when they throw the negative thing out there, it's like a lot of times folks will say like gangs and they'll say gang activities, when in fact on those people's books now, gang activity, if you organize a bunch of folks together for voter registration, for example, if you're a group, you know, and if you're not one on the good side of them, then you are actually involved in gang activity. So we have a lot of folks trying to deny that they did something, which in and of itself isn't wrong. Have I been associated with certain people? Yeah. And that's what some places, like in California, used to be good with this for inside, where I done validated somebody. But I validated what? They do hang together. Whether you're talking about for negative activity or somewhere else. Illinois, they would do it a whole lot on the street. So the use of the word gang, I think, like, sometimes, you know, we have to think about how we even use it. And, like, the title Gang Up on Oppression was actually us banding together against oppression. You know, so, I mean, either we think about, like, you know, words to use that or just give up the word altogether. Now, that's a whole lot different than, like, when folks be talking about gang banging. Because a lot of groups and formation had long ago outlawed gang banging. You know, and that's different. But yeah, I think sometimes we really got to be careful, because we go ahead and we sign our names or something and we say, like, yeah, it needs to be restrictions, it needs to be so-and-so on gang activity. We need to be careful about what activity we're talking about. And I'm going to say, like I know when I used to work for the American Friends Service Committee up in Newark, New Jersey, because I was with their well, it was criminal justice program, then it became like I forgot, it was a different name. But anyway, I used to work with somebody that's been doing the work for a long time, Bonnie Kerness. And like I worked in a project called Prison Watch, which monitored, you know, the use of control units and devices of torture in the U.S. And we watched the growth of what's called security. Officially, they're called security threat management units. People think about them in terms of calling gang units. But we watched them increase. We watched the number of manuals that different departments of corrections, different law enforcement, what they call law enforcement agencies, were putting out. Initially, a lot of the material that came out was like kind of like restricted to law enforcement. But then they started getting bold and bolder putting it out there. And if you look at in some places, like the number of groups that they considered to be gangs, which and subject to certain restrictions or whatever, it was growing and growing and growing. I mean, in some places it was like based on religion. In some areas of the United States was based just on a street. If you lived on that street, you was a member of a gang. And then what allowed them both inside and outside to throw all the penalties on is if, in fact, somebody within that group did something or brought some element in or weapon or whatever, well, then it changed it from, like, just being a group that can be violated if they was inside or a group that can be restricted outside. So, again, it ain't to say, like, folks don't get together and do some negative stuff, but sometimes we allow them to, like, do that criminalization thing on whole groups. And in the case of oppressed New Africans, a lot of those groups have actually been some of the formations who had the discipline to aid in what we needed to do. So when you said, by the way, because even when you talk about gangs and groups like that, I know groups like, it was groups like my brother and them came through, and I don't remember all ever calling them gangs, but they went to one form of activity to start telling me about this brother they heard over in New York called Malcolm X. And they just switched the whole thing up. They went on to be some of the most disciplined warriors out there in the struggle. So, again, how they use it and what they do and when they can use certain things to separate elements of the community, especially those elements who got the nervous energy and know how to do certain things. You know, I think we have to be careful and not let them use that, again, not just to lock up, but to use also to tag people, stop them from getting any kind of employment. It's a whole lot of things associated with that. And I might have went further than whatever you said, but, yeah. I think sometimes, like I said, yeah, I think we need to look at that. All right.
Okay.
Oh, besides not just my brother, I came through them groups, I should point out. So, you know, yeah. One of them.
It's all good. Yeah, but Baba Chitu, what are your thoughts there? Yeah, I think your line dropped. Hold on, your line dropped. Hold on, let me add a scar in, cause he had something to say about that. The scar, your line open, Conrad. Your line open.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
What's up with the brothers, man? I send my love and respect to everyone, and
yes,
I mean, we know about the Jeff Fords, those of us who've been conscious in the struggle, you know, about the Yafeus and Fatiyeos and Fumas, you know, Sangus, Sanis, you know, we know about the struggle in terms of we as prisoners have been subjected to the indefinite sentencing. And, you know, we admire the brother Jeff Ford and Larry Hoover and countless other brothers all throughout the country, because they are heroes and are sheroes, the sisters too. But we have to get to a place where we have to be able to not sell, but educate our people, those who's in position of power, who can make a difference by utilizing their resources and their monies, in particular, to help challenge the injustices that we clearly see when it comes to indefinite sentencing. Indefinite sentencing is cruel and inhumane. To subject any human being to 50 years inside of any prison is cruel and inhumane, regardless of whatever they're trying to lay the jacket of claim on for the justification. There ain't no justification for holding no human being inside of any prison, that especially a productive human being, as far as mind-wise and discipline and character. These ain't men and women who fall short of any kind of discipline. They breathe and live for discipline. So why would, you know, you have a system that subjects them to a cruel and unusual death by way of execution? I want to touch bases on being able to bring forth to the world, not just this nation, but to the world, the cruelty and the wickedness and the evil that have subjected us to this prison industrial slave complex, where we literally are being held without no justification other than, hey, the skin on our backs. It ain't no other reason why we here like this. You know, it's about 80 to 90% black and brown prisoners held throughout the country. You can get now to 10 to 15% of whites and others inside the prison, particularly in California. And you don't have no whites in prison. You know, these young white men and women are going into the police force with all of these prejudices and racist mentalities, and they carrying out their acts in the streets. So that's the dual reality right there. But watch this. I'm a penal baby. I've been in the system all my life, from foster care all the way to placement, all the way to camp, all the way to youth authority, all the way to jails, all the way to the penitentiary. And that's not by accident. The circumstances and the deprivations that they subjected the community to justify the results, the end results. So then you go off into the reality of this. The government have created a modern-day slave plantation system where they have structured all of these placements, all of these camps, all of these youth authorities, all of these jails, and all of these prisons uniquely inside of rural white areas where they're so isolated from the reality of the people in which they hold in them that where they come from ain't nowhere near these people's residents. So therefore, the government has systematically carried out institutionalized racism and systemic racism by way of establishing this modern-day slave plantation where exclusively white communities benefit off of black slavery, brown slavery. This is concrete. We can prove that based on the strategically and tactical way they have established prisons throughout this country. You see what I'm saying? So that this is one of the things we can easily prove to be a fact. And so this is the way that they also, the government, funnel taxpayers' dollars into exclusively white communities, which is another form of what I call money laundering by circumventing it away from the lot of the taxpayers, which would have served the interests of the schools and other things that's very much so needed in the community of people of, you know, hue. But unfortunately for us, this government have always had an application that stems around racism, systemic racism. So we have to get out, and what I just laid out is explain. Say again, brother.
I said true indeed. The elder Gita done got back on too, right? So I'm gonna let him get in too as well. But go ahead though.
I just want to say based on who we should be soliciting to, and I'm talking about our people that we got billionaires, we got millionaires, we got people that got real mean, and they have to come in and they have to challenge this judicial system, this United States Supreme Court, that they put so much emphasis on choosing who they think will serve the best interest of new African / black people in this country. So if they believe in this system, then they should believe that this system is corrupt. This system is racist. This system is extremely prejudiced against people that is of new African / black and brown descent. So therefore, we have to get them to invest inside of exposing, because we can write a million articles, we can get out on the street and protest, but money defeats money. This going to take real energy and real money to really bring a light to show that, hey, man, this system is wicked. And it's been wicked since the inception of 1619 when they start introducing humans into slavery, us in particular, new African / black men and women and children. So we need to really focus in on showing this modern-day slave plantation. That's all prisons, jails, and camps, and YAs, and placements. That's all they are. It's modern-day slave plantation for profit, for take care of white life.
True indeed. True indeed. Go ahead, Elder Gita. Can he hear? Can he?
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead. I hear you now. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Response to the issue with gangs.
Yeah.
You know, term gang,
yeah,
is a tool that establishment you to separate us from our young people. The streets are part of the street.
Are you going in and out? Go ahead.
Okay. And directly into the phone.
Okay.
And educate them of our existence. Let them understand that our history didn't start from chattel slavery, that we had a rich history of chattel slavery, but the part back into the current of the issue of certain terminology. Different programs out there yes to into this concept of a when through point of level that we had a structure in place for young people to understand a lot of the issues, a lot of the social that to is community and to you.
Damn, kind of right here. Phone acting up over there, Baba Masai. I mean, Baba G too.
Say it again.
I said your phone over there acting up, ain't it?
Probably you can prove that. That term they use manipulate the community, who would to ensure liberation of our people. That's something that the sacrifice wants.
Carl, you might need to call my line, man. Put you on my line, so I can hear you better. You hear me out of Jesus? Call my line. I can hook you up, link in on my line, so I can hear you better. All right. Oh, okay. Let's see, hold on. Oh, okay. Let's go. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Colin. I hear you.
All right. Okay, well, I will express my point related to the issue of overtime games. So,
okay.
I'm not going to say what you heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My next question is, what is COINTELPRO, what effect did it have on our movements and communities?
Okay, I'll do one of my things. We'll do a little bit at first and then remember something later. Okay, well, COINTELPRO is a counterintelligence program, and it's like, I think a lot of folks knew that something was happening in certain movements, and we can see that like maybe on a large scale, possibly around the time of the Panther Party. But I do think that people shouldn't, you know, and a lot of people noticed it wasn't limited to the Panther Party, maybe because there were so many people involved with the Panther Party in so many different areas of the country that when certain things started happening, it was more noticeable. But the counterintelligence program was, you know, what was the aim of it for the U.S. government to neutralize certain activities and certain programs. They say, like it was started originally around some groups like communist organizations and socialist groups. A lot of folks would say, it actually went back with the time when J. Edgar Hoover and them and around Marcus Garvey. But, it was ways to infiltrate and even in violation of their law, whatever good their little law was, the counterintelligence program was in violation of it. And it was a program with not just the infiltration and collecting of information, but actually engaging and encouraging activities that led to the loss of life. Now, you say, what did that do to movements?
What kind of effect did it? Yes, sir. What kind of effect did it have?
It had a tremendous negative effect on people. You had people walking around half paranoid, the breakup of families. And if, in fact, we saw, and I'm going to go back to something that happened in Chicago, for folks who saw the movie, they would have actually seen when there was the attempts with between Fred and what they call the Crowns, but for folks who had the Crowns, but if for folks who actually looked at documents, they would know that it was actually an attempt by the.
What movie are you referring to?
Oh, excuse me. I'm so glad you said that. For folks who saw the Black Panther movement. They saw the Black Panther movement. They saw when in the beginning stages when Fred was really jumping out there. And what they did in the movie, they called the group the Crown.
And there's reasons
why they used that for certain things. For folks who actually read the COINTEL document, because that's one of the biggest incidents people talk about, they would know that what had happened was like the FBI attempted to establish friction between Jeff Ford and those formations that was with Jeff Ford and Fred Hampton. I think a lot of folks got to remember these were some folks who had a tremendous amount of respect for each other. So it wasn't a game that Jeff Ford allowed himself to fall into. And again, if you live in Chicago for a certain amount of time, and if you can talk about organizing, you need to recognize that. So that would have been one of the biggest examples right there. To try to get what, was basically the Panther Party trying to get the established in Chicago to have conflict with a larger formation. You know, actually the Stones at that time would have had more folks than the Panthers had nationwide. So, but that would be one of the examples of the use of COINTELPRO. I know I saw the effect that it had on family members, people I know, the family members of other people that I was with, in a little bit of background there, because I was also in the Panther Party. It had a super a slowdown effect, and some people actually never recovered. Never recovered.
For the people listening, the elder was talking about the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. That's the movie he was talking about.
Judas, right, okay. I'm glad you, Judas and the Black Messiah. Glad to see they didn't just want to neutralize Fred by locking him up. They wanted Fred to be gone.
Yeah, my perspective on COINTELPRO, the FBI counterintelligence program, it really did a lot of damage to the Black Liberation Movement. And even when we talk about the Civil Rights Movement, there was it didn't rear its ugly head as much during that time period, but like, as I say, it goes back quite a ways. They used it against Martin Luther King and other formations during that time, Marcus Garvey. It's a divisive tool that they've been used to undermine any progress that was made. I think that many became aware of it as it relates to the Black Panthers, because of the, through the Freedom of Information Act, we were able to cover a lot of documentation, but most of it was didactic, that showed a pattern of exploiting the leadership of the Panther Party, specifically Huey Newton and Eldridge Cleaver, and working toward destroying that organization from the inside out with some of the tactics such as agent provocateurs and so forth. But we got to be clear that that's not something that happened a long time ago. They've refined their efforts through their process, and COINTELPRO is still existence today under different names, under different protocols. It's also being utilized by other institutions, whether it's national or state. For example, in California, you have groups like SSU, IGI. These are all some of the tactics they use are similar to the ones I was using at COINTELPRO. You know, you had various law enforcement put together teams that reflected some of the activities that COINTELPRO was involved in. So we got to still be cautious about information or misinformation that tends to color some people who are doing good work as the enemy based on the misinformation that's put out there.
True indeed.
Okay, and what I'm saying, like, for folks who don't know, it's like COINTELPRO first came to people's light, and that was like, I think it was Catholic priests or nuns, whatever, pacifists or whatever, when they raided FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania. They went in there with one goal to find out some kind of papers, because COINTELPRO wasn't known, and they went into the office with the idea of finding some papers and doing something with them. But what they ended up finding out was that it was actually a whole program that the FBI had, and that was like, that's what kind of, that's what blew COINTELPRO out there, brought it to the public's awareness. But like Brother Jitu also said, it's like a lot of what was under COINTELPRO and what they, at least the U.S. government said was illegal, what they ended up doing was some stuff continued like underground on law enforcement part, but the Patriot Act actually allowed for a lot of what was being done under COINTELPRO to just become legalized, which also goes into a thing a lot of times, there's a lot of struggles and activities that take place that we as New Africans really need to be more involved in. It's not just about, like, making noise on the street or doing whatever. It's really understanding just how sophisticated that enemy is and really looking into it. And then I can say, like, at the same time, when COINTELPRO jumped out there, it was also a lot of changes that was taking place within what we call the movement. We was moving from that civil rights thing. For a lot of us, it wasn't civil rights. It was human rights we wanted. But there was also a thing, if we remember, the Provisional Government of the Republic of Africa was founded in 1968. There were other movements for independence. So a lot of us no longer wanted the same thing. So COINTELPRO was able to exploit differences that we've already had, which comes sometimes even be the same thing now when people go out there with a bunch of sloganeering, but we really haven't sat down with each other and said, like, not so much what we want to tear down, but what is it that we're trying to build? Because then when we figure that out, a lot of times we can work together. But when we got different goals and objectives and haven't even talked about it, it's very easy for somebody to play and make us look like enemies because we never at certain points agreed on the same thing anyway. So COINTELPRO took advantage of things like there was developments within the Nation of Islam. And like I said, there was developments among what was called the Black Liberation Movement, among those elements that wanted independence, truly wanted independence, you know, not just more black faces in different places. So, again, it took advantage of those things on a very large scale because you can't do that with people who are really close to each other and know each other. Or you can do it, but it's extremely hard. So I wanted to point that. And that's one of the things that we really kind of like need to do more now because we see people hooking up with each other and sometimes it's not really clear about what they're hooking up based on.
Okay. You know? No doubt. Up and let the scar get in on us. How you want to get in on that? You want to say something about that? Go ahead, bro.
No, I was going to say, you know, understanding that historical contradiction as it relates to the COINTELPRO counterintelligence program and what effect it has on the many movements and organizations that the brothers and sisters have established in order to try to liberate us from some of this oppression in which we've been subjected to indefinitely. I just honestly see the system advancing and becoming more effective in carrying out what it's been carrying out since the inception of this country. Now, it get better and better. It's not because none of the FBI, CIA, the DEA, the ATF, none of these, they just improved them. So none of them was dismantled to the degree, even though after realizing the detriment that they subjected new Africans / black people to, and we haven't yet seen any kind of retribution in the form of justice, you know, carried out against these agencies or against this government that been consistent with making sure that we suffer. No matter what we try to do in this country to make our lives better, it always comes behind us and sabotages. So when I hear COINTELPRO, I'm looking at counterinsurgency inside our communities today. I'm keyed in on that right there, how they done turned our communities into prisons, you know, how they got cameras on every porch, how they got videos on every porch, how they got barbed wires and gates surrounding the projects and areas where people normally used to freely move about. Now they being concentrated on the cameras and technology and watched 24/7. So now we all in prison. You know, so we haven't been able to change the onslaught in which we find ourselves placed, because now they coming out, they blowing us away, and they get away with it with immunity, and we don't have to, and this is just me talking, and it don't seem like we have no counter for dealing with as revolutionary men and women who's keyed in on the change of these injustices, you know, for change for these injustices against our people and ourselves. Seem like we having a struggle with trying to figure out how to challenge this system. And even though we do have many great minds throughout the country, and whether in or out, we have a lot of great minds. but we haven't put together how we're going to stop Jackie or Pookie or whoever from getting blown away tomorrow or tonight, rather. You know, we haven't figured out how we're going to stop all white police, militarized police departments from coming in our communities, exclusively all white, and terrorizing us continuously. This is where our brains have to begin to move towards figuring out how can we stop the onslaught. And this is one of the things I think brothers and sisters, the heroes and the sheroes of our time that are still with us, have to, we got to get these brothers out these damn gulags. We can't let them sit in there forever. They die. We just lost Chip Fitzgerald. You know, we're going to continue to lose a lot more of them if we can't get them out here. This should be the immediate emergency call should be, hey, we have to have our people released. There should be a mass movement around they release. You know, this is not about justice. They not in there because they being punished for a crime. They in here because the government is malicious. And they need to be challenged. And it should not be no end to that challenge until they release. And this is the seriousness of our state of condition right now. You know, Larry Hoover, Jeff Ford, all these brothers, the Yafeos and et cetera, they should not be held indefinitely inside these prisons like this. And the only way they're going to be free is the people raise their voice loud enough and fight hard enough to get them out. And then the COINTELPRO is the ones that use the mechanisms and the little tactical and strategical aims to keep them in. Now it's time for us to dictate and demand that they be released and educate our public to it ASAP. I just wanted to say that.
True indeed. True indeed. True indeed. My next question is, right, somebody got something to say?
Oh, well, this is Messiah. I always got something to say, but no, I'll wait for the next question. I'll wait. I wanted to say something about it. This is going to go back to the security threat group management units, though, and security threat groups, but I'll wait.
My next question is the black prison movement and the new African prison movement related or connected to the black liberation movement and new African independent movement? For those who don't know.
I think it's just a use of different terms. I don't see any difference between the two. Both of them are, you know, it's just a term that you know, some people feel more comfortable using black, others African or New African. You know, but we're talking about the same people and the movement for liberation.
You said it? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, and I know a lot of folks share that view. See, because, and I should say because, among other things, I was with a formation called Spin Shield Collective, and folks keep using a lot of Spin Shield Collective's writing, too. When Spin Shield evolved and, like, it actually, that collective itself grew out of what was happening in Illinois prisoners. But for a lot of us, what it was, and this goes back to that whole thing for us, even like how COINTELPRO was able to do something, certain thing. For us, it was really a matter of clarity, because also I should say, cause since I came through the Black Liberation Army, but even within the BLA at times, there was different formations who, and I'm not one of the ones who think like it was just one thing, you know, with one leadership and a well-coordinated body. I shared a view of like Asada and Geronimo about what the BLA was. But in any case, there were those folks who were clearly, at that point, wanted to clearly articulate a position around New African independence. So it was differences between that and what a lot of people was talking about in terms of black liberation. I mean, we might all be talking about liberation, but independent had a whole different dynamic, even in terms of like not just about the land, because the land served the purpose, but how we organize people, what it is that people are really trying to do. We may concentrate more on certain activities. as opposed to that other movement. So in some cases, yeah, people did start using, like, you know, the New African slash Black, and they was one and the same. But that created a problem, because then we had folks who weren't even talking about independence that was using New Africans, because that doesn't apply, you know, that relates to a lot of people, that relates to the name of the people of the nation, so we are a New African nation. But it didn't mean that all in that nation related independence. So there's some New Africans who relate to independence who have a problem when other folks use it and ain't talking about independence, because we run into like what the goals and objectives are. So that's one of them things I'm saying, like during the period of time, especially as people were inside, more folks was coming in from different units and different formations and had a chance to put their heads together and talk about what it is we really want. So sometimes, yeah, it could be one and the same, but other times, you know, like I said, Spear and Shear, we felt like there was a need to have clarity. Even though Spear and Shear was a collective made up of armed captured combatants, so we came from one front, and a lot of us came from different organizations, but we gravitated towards a position of developing a line, both a mass line and an internal line that reflected the reality of independence. You know, that's our relationship with when we talk about the provisional government, when we talk about the movement, what it means to us. Of course, the provisional government would mean more to New Africans who relate to independence than it does to other New Africans who don't, or to that general Black man. So again, like I said, for us, it's a conversation that we had and took serious then, and we think it needs to continue. And I could think of a lot of areas where actually it does. It has caused some problems. I won't get into all of it now, but at least that's our thoughts, you know, that we really wanted to articulate a position. When we talked about POWs, what did we really mean? What did it mean to be a New African political prisoner? You know, what did it mean to be just a captive citizen? Those kind of things took on a significance for us at that time and still do. Just a thought.
True indeed. Okay, I can appreciate the distinction that society is making, but it goes beyond just the term Black or African and New African when you attach on independence to it. I mean, they're, you know, for some folks, I mean, I use it interchangeably. When I'm talking about our folks, and maybe I use our folks as opposed to any of the others, but I know that they're those using the words of illustrious Elhaj Malik, you know, the field Negro and the house Negro. You know, the house Negro would say, when the master sick or boss we sick, you know, they're looking for reforms. They're not trying to change. They're not looking for independence. They're looking for ways to improve upon the conditions that they're subjected to. And a lot of them have an issue with using the term New African or African. You know, that old thing, I ain't no African. But for my purposes, I use the term interchangeably, and it's always associated with independence. It's always associated with liberation. It's always associated with the destruction of capitalism and imperialism. And I have to appreciate what Masai is saying, because they are those who want reform. They don't want to get rid of it. They don't want to abolish the prison system. They want to make it more comfortable. They don't want to get rid of capitalism because they benefit from capitalism. So when we get down to looking at the distinctions, I think that makes a difference.
True indeed. I got a couple more questions. What exactly is a politicized prisoner, or is this term a misnomer?
So I'm going to let you tackle that first.
Okay. It is kind of funny because, you know, me and Brother Bomani have had this conversation a few times. And even when I think about it more in later years, I ask that question to myself because an example would be like several months back, he had like Baba Hakim and Mama Tamu of the RNA 11. And one of the things they discussed was about politically educating some folks inside. So, and even for me, I should say like more about the independence movement. I actually got that from some comrades. Some were already inside, and that also relates to that thing about when we talk about who's known and who's not known. These folks that actually came, they had a deeper analysis of the independence movement. So a lot of the political education, I might have had some because I came from some formation, came from the Panthers and whatever. But in terms of, like, if we're talking about for the New African Independence Movement, there were people who were already in there, and there were people who may have helped people who are inside. So a lot of times when people be talking about politicized, they're actually coming from, they're usually a lot of times talking about, a lot of times they're not necessarily talking about people who came from the independent. They're not coming from independent. Because there's folks that was in there before we even articulated a clear thing around independent. So who's politicizing who? I guess that would be my point when they say politicize, because the same thing like when we talk about some of them folks who are some of the formations I mentioned before, like Malmeen came from, and his sister was a minister of education, a minister within the provisional government, brother-in-law, long time involvement. So sometimes people will say, because he didn't come from one thing, he's not politicized, but he's more politicized than same thing like a lot of other folks. They're more politicized in terms of what we're talking about doing than some other folks. So, yeah, who makes that determination? And can that actually, what, to me, that's one of them things that can be dangerous. It can be. It don't have to be, but I just think when people throw it out there, I think it becomes dangerous for me when people use it to exclude other people or put people on that second-class list. I could think, actually, out your way, on the West Coast, there's a lot of folks that people don't know, but they know more about the independence movement than a lot of people that people do know. But there's a tendency sometimes not to include certain people as being those folks who are actually political. They put them more in the group and are politicized. And to a large extent, I think a lot of us were actually politicized after we came in. We may have had some when we became more politicized. And if folks didn't know the RNA 11, then it already shows they don't have a lot of politics from a standpoint of the independence movement.
Okay. I've had debates that go back as far as the early 80s in different forums where we talk about who's a political president, who's not, and so forth. And I think we do ourselves a disservice when we start attaching certain terminology to define what opposition is in terms of the struggle. If we're both fighting for liberation of African people and other oppressed people, how important is it to say, well, you're a politicized prisoner and I'm a political prisoner? I mean, I just think it's a useless term that separates us as opposed to uniting us in a battle. The suppressive. Is this foot of my neck a little less because I'm politicized and a little more because you're political? The bottom line is he got his foot on both our necks, you know, and if we unite around the fact that we're both, whatever terminology is applied to us, we're both catching hell, then that makes us stronger when we unite around that issue of getting the foot off our neck, you know. So I think it's a useless term to define who we are or what separates us from one another. We're both fighting for the liberation of our people. We're both fighting for the independence of our people. We're a different formation in a different region of this country, but our objectives are the same. So that term came up last year around Black August. And I'm like, where did that come from? And what does it mean? How does it distinguish me from someone else that's doing the same work I'm doing and that look like me, that's been oppressed just like I am? We're just in different regions of the United States, or we're in different regions of the world. We're fighting for the liberation of African people overall.
True, and
independence.
True indeed. Let me let a couple of these callers get in right quick. Bob, hold up. Two four zero five six for your lineup. You have a question, comment, statement, mate. Please use your time. Your line is open.
I'm Jumbo Conrad.
Jumbo.
My comment is in response to what I just heard the Rand saying about the useless terms between political prisoner and a politicized prisoner. I don't necessarily think that they use this term. I think that they do specify the awareness of the individual or the group in terms of where they are in the struggle. I feel like a lot of the time people, the brothers who are behind the wall, when they are politicized there, a lot of times we don't venture outside of those this type of political struggle. So when we get brothers outside of prison, you know, it's they are more in tune politically with how to combat the prison industrial slave complex. And I think it's important to give them, you know, a designation that entails that they came into their awareness in the belly of the beast. And that's where they came of age. Like, that's where they experienced the struggle. Because everybody don't experience the struggle the same way. A lot of political prisoners have an experience in the struggle that politicized prisoners don't. Like how the brother was saying that a lot of the people who was involved in the Spear and Shield Collective came out of the armed struggle, although maybe coming from various organizations like the Mile Mile, BLA, et cetera, SLA, and et cetera. So, you know, they have an awareness of the struggle that some of us in prison, you know, sad to say, some of us in prison never get to experience because we never get released from these bowels of hell for real. So I think that the terms are important. I don't think that they're useless, but I do understand what he was saying in terms of unifying. I don't think that having those terms, you know, specifying two different groups of people according to their political awareness or where they came into their political awareness necessarily means that they are divided in their struggle against the same people, because we know, you know what I'm saying, the politicized prisoners and the political prisoners, that the prison industrial slave complex is built and designed and earmarked for people like us who have an awareness. And they make sure that they have bed space and super and ultra max prisons for individuals who they want to lock away their ideas and the examples that they set for others. And, you know, we got a lot of examples of people like that. Like, I just do want to give a shout-out to the brother Fitzgerald, man. Rest in peace. And a shout-out to Malcolm X, man. Happy birthday. But yeah, man, I do think that they fit, you know what I'm saying, because for myself, you know, a lot of time I don't see, you know what I'm saying, I'm a politicized prisoner. I didn't have a political awareness when I was on the street, so, you know, get to the street, it's like I know what the struggle is in the belly of the beast. So when I get, you know, released from this plantation, I feel like it's a duty of the politicized prisoners to create those underground railroads so that brothers could get out, or help them create institutions to combat these institutions, because the institutions that exist, you know, even when they say today about combating these institutions, they laugh in your face. Y'all got a comrade on the line with me. We listening together. You know what I'm saying? You know, his wife called a spot, asked him, you know, what office, what services do you offer the prisoners? You an organization that says that you offer services to prisoners. They laughed in her face. They laughed at her. Okay, you really got this lady answering the phone? She laughed at you and asked her, like, what you mean? What I mean? So I'm like, yeah, so, you know, like, this, I feel like it's the duty of the politicized president if and when they get released. Yeah, that is the struggle that they are most familiar with, because a lot of the people that's out there that's politicized, they don't know anything about this. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why they don't feel like that this is going to be their end result. You know, even here with a great.
Sure indeed.
I'd like to respond to that if I can.
Go ahead.
I understand the perspective and what brother's saying.
Y'all still hear me?
How he's defining politicized. But let me give a little scenario. Me and some of my homeboys, we're young. We're 16 to maybe 20. We've been watching all these police killings and all this abuse that's going on among towards African people in our hood. You know, then George Floyd, the incident George Floyd, comes along. And we're incensed.
Yeah.
We want to do something. We want to make a difference. So we decided we're going to go to some pig station and burn it down. We burn the pigs. We set the pig station on fire. I get caught up, and I end up going to prison as a result of my activity. Now, I haven't done any studying. I haven't done any critical analysis of the problem and the solutions for it. I'm just angry about what I see happening. I get in prison.
Right.
I start reading. I start developing understanding. I connect with some brothers, and I'm reading. We're talking about this in an organized way. Am I a political prisoner or am I a politicized prisoner?
True. That's true. I agree with that.
I think when I say it's a useless term, it separates us. It makes us think that we're in one camp and they're in another camp. We're both catching hell. I caught hell because I was tired of this system fucking over us, excuse my expression, and I fought back. I did something to make a difference. But it wasn't until I got to prison that I began to study, I began to look at historically since the inception of chattel slavery and even beyond chattel slavery, the institutions of higher learning that's part of my history, that's part of my culture. I didn't know nothing about that when I was on the streets. But now I've gotten that, so where does that place me?
I know Scar want to get in too, right? Oh, yeah, Scar.
Again, I agree with the brother too. You know, I mean, being politicized is one thing, but being subjected to cruel and inhumane treatment is a whole other thing. And that's gonna come out of that politicized. So, you know, I think them, like when I look at the Philadelphia children, and I hear the outcry coming out of Philadelphia, all I hear is Mumia and Moody. You would think the other brothers were just having fun and kicking and having, but they suffering over there too equally. And it's a lot.
They got the brother Bomani out there moving too, though. Bomani, go ahead.
Oh yeah, yeah, but we don't hear about it over here on the West Coast. We'll hear about Mumia 24/7. We'll hear about the move, and it's rightfully so. They fight more harder than the ones that fear. And I'm saying this to say, you know, it should be about a national struggle that leads to an immigrant.
Yeah.
That's what it should be about. Everybody is politicized based on unfortunate circumstances in which we were placed inside this nation, in this world, in many respects, and how we are held today. So we all politicized in that sense. Now, we would look at the Georges and all of the brothers and sisters that hold to some kind of revolutionary mentality or walk or step, you know, however you want to phrase it.
but we would look at them as being our political leaders. I'm with the political leaders. You see what I'm saying? Because the political leaders is what guides the struggle. You see what I'm saying? But when we talk about political prison, hey, that's a lot of us. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm a dig ass just like the next brother, whether I'm conscious or not, when it's going against the people. You see a lot of brothers that just as dumb as Tic Tac with big ass in the interest of the people, just like any political person would in respects to how they identify. But I think we got political leaders, and one political leader is the Mumias, you know, and the brothers that we spoke of earlier. And we need to always support and hear what they got to say to us when they want to speak it to us. And this is where we at right now in the struggle. We have to get away from these titles, because these titles is what divide and conquer. They'll make a young brother think he ain't tied to that, when he actually, that's his whole life right there. And that's yeah. What I wanted to ask for this whole topic right here.
Can I add something to that? Go ahead, Conrad.
Go ahead, Conrad.
Yeah, I was going to say, because when I said it before, I think, and sometimes it's more along the line, I was thinking, sometimes people use this like titles of ranks. And one of the reasons I specifically mentioned the RNA 11, because, like, okay, if a political prison, somebody goes in there because of the, you know, political activities and stuff. But their activities, a lot of times their political activities, and they're good activities, but in terms of, like, for the independence movement, it had nothing to do with the independence movement. So even though we can recognize somebody as being a political prisoner, it doesn't mean that they know more about the independence movement than somebody who not quite considered, didn't go in there for a political activity, but be by virtue of study, learning, or whatever. Because a lot of times it ain't hard for people to pick up who have become more advanced. So when people say politicized prison, sometimes people do think it it's a rank structure, and it's less than. And even some of the brothers you just mentioned, by the way, and I love them brothers and people, but some of them never profess to be about the independence movement. And because somebody don't, I also don't put them down. But there's a lot of folks, they never said they was. So we in South and independence movement, we confuse people. Because we put folks up, and brothers said political leadership, and a lot of folks, that is true. There's a lot of political leadership. Some developed, they were already political. Some developed by virtue of the study that they did inside, and they have that natural ability. But a lot of times when we do this political prison, quote-unquote political prison thing, we kind of put them to the side. And again, I'm talking from the perspective of the independence movement, because of other folks. And that can be confusing for folks in the street who really just relate to, like, they want to aid, they want to assist or whatever, but they don't really know the difference between certain things. And we don't help that process when we put certain folks forward as being the leadership of some stuff. The leadership of some stuff, but not for this movement. So that's where I think, like, sometimes it's like, yeah, that rank structure that people do. And for a lot of folks, they just didn't find out because they come inside. And by the way, there's also something else related to that, because we be saying that so much sometimes, and people would throw resources and time and whatever towards certain people. By virtue of, we call the same political prisoners, what the state will sometimes do is definitely not ever let somebody get out on parole. They'll never get out. But if they go out now, remember now, if they go out for even 2 days and come back in because of something, now we're calling political prisoner. But the state just won't let them out. So we will never give, and some people will never give the level of support they need to continue to struggle, if what we're talking about, again, for the independence movement. If they organize and they send people out, they doing whatever, because there are some folks, I ain't saying all in a lot, but there's some folks, just because they went in as a political prisoner, again, that, you know, might not have ever picked up another book again.
Right. Yeah,
you know, might not have cooked up everything, so I don't think it can quite go like that. And even when I mentioned going in, again, it was a lot of folks, and this also goes back to that known and unknown thing. If, in fact, there's a lot of folks who ain't known, but by virtue of us connecting inside, a lot of folks don't want to ever be known, but we have to figure out a way to support them. You know, they don't want to be known, and they don't need to be known. But the way some folks be doing this now, it's like folks be rushing to get to the camera, so people know their name, you know, instead of being representatives or speakers for other folks. you know, it's like if we get into a thing where I have to have my name out there, you have to know me in order to get certain stuff. We almost encourage, and again, this ain't everybody, but we sometimes encourage some of the worst instincts of people. And we get away from developing that underground that we need. And by the way, I hate the Empire. I think we need to, and we said this before, we need to develop this underground. And we knew that before. If anything, yeah, because as somebody else also said before, the pigs be hitting hard and heavy. We might not have known how just how serious they was before, but we do know that now. So we don't have a lot of excuses to go out and do the same thing. And the development of an underground, I mean, everybody ain't supposed to be known. You know,
I say one more thing too. I do feel like those terms are generic terms, like they blanket terms, and like us, especially my teachers, they always tell me, man, you got to call something by its right name. I'm saying like everybody is not a Gaiety, everybody's not a revolutionary. Just because you're a political prisoner, doesn't mean that you're about overturning the social system of America. You know what I'm saying? Doesn't mean that you are anti-capitalist or pro-socialist or pro-independence or pro-expatriation or any of that. Like, they're just the generic terms that really indicate that you are somebody that the establishment does not like, but that doesn't mean that you are revolutionary. You know what I'm saying? It does not mean that you agree with us when we say that, yeah, it's been over 400 years. We ain't never had an opportunity really to establish something of our own and get away from the people that's been oppressing us or the systems and the institutions that's been oppressing us. So, you know, to be a political prisoner, a prisoner of conscience, prisoner of war, I think they are generic terms that, I mean, apply to something specific but really don't get down to the nuts and bolts of your politics. And I agree with the brother just said, like, hey, some of these brothers, you know, we look at them as political prisoners, but they not New Africans. They don't champion the New African cause. That doesn't, you know, diminish their contributions to the forward progression of what we're trying to accomplish. But, you know, like, we can't really get into the idea that, yeah, everybody is the same, because we're not. It was actually a conversation being held on the radio earlier where people was talking about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, how they both was against, you know what I'm saying, police brutality and the murder of black people by vigilante group, paramilitary group, police, you know what I'm saying, you know, FBI, CIA, and all these other groups. But, I mean, when you get down to their politics, they did not agree on anything. And so that might be the only thing they agreed on, is that they didn't want our people to be brutalized and oppressed anymore. But even that wasn't enough to bring them together to work in unison toward the same goal, because they was not going to the same place. Like, what they envisioned was not the same. So we can't even come up with one general term to identify them, because that would be misleading. Because really, some of our people do not know that Malcolm X was a separatist until his dying day. He never gave that up. People say he gave up, then he left the nation alone. He never gave up the push for independence of black people. Never. He might have changed. He might have had questions about what he wanted to call his politics, what he wanted to call his ideology, you know what I'm saying, but from interacting with other people around the world. But fundamentally, he was the same as he always been. We need to stop these people from killing us and start our own government. The man himself always said, I'm not an American. I am a member of millions of black African people who are victims of Americanism. This man was anti-American through and through to his bones. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't nothing that, it really wasn't no bridge between him and Mark, outside of the fact that he was like, yeah, we bought that mess, and if you trying to do what you want to do, we're going to support you and defend you. Ultimately, we ain't going in the same direction, but I'm going to take this stand to defend black people regardless of what your politics are. You know what I'm saying? And that, to me, deserves for him to have a title, or, you know, have a delineation of his politics that separates him from other individuals who can march with him in the street. You know what I'm saying? Like Martin was marching with the brother, his name. Yeah, I know what I'm talking about, the young brother that was the leader of SNCC. I don't know why his name just slipped my mind, but yeah, like, they marched together, but they did not agree on their politics. It's the only thing they agreed on.
Myself and Carmichael.
Kwame Ture, I believe he started calling. But yeah, so, hey, man, like, I agree with a lot of what brothers are saying about how, you know, our oppressors call attention to the differences in titles and use those differences against us to say, oh, they on this, y'all on that, and use those things as antagonistic opposites, but we not like that. We never been like that as African people, you know what I'm saying, even as new African people. We wasn't like that. We always knew that it was our job to defend us, to defend anybody who looks like us, regardless of our politics, because at the end of the day, like the Ray Ascari said, we all under the same boot of oppression, and it's all of our responsibility to get it up off of us. But once it's up off of us, we really gonna get down to the nuts and bolts of what people want. And a lot of the time, the people who fought to get that boot off of us, and we did it in unison, they're gonna be the same people who gonna cross the barricades when we start talking about independence. And I'm getting ready. I feel like I'm talking too much, so I'm gonna leave it at this part. Right? One thing that I feel like I learned from looking at world revolutions and independence struggles, particularly the Irish, I always thought that it was ironic truth to how they got Ireland, which is not their whole country, but they, you know, got majority of it. It took them to kill more Irish people than British people to get what they got. Now, I think that's something important for us to be aware of, that there's going to be people that's just like us who are going to be pushing for, you know, civil rights, because that's what they were pushing for. They had a civil rights movement following the footsteps of us, that example that we were laying down. You know, they were pushing for that, and they was marching together. But when it came down to talking about independence, talking about pursuing socialism, talking about developing the underground, developing an ability to strike the enemy and to defend their people, they actually had to kill more of their own to achieve what they was trying to achieve. And I feel like, man, that's something that we definitely need to be cognizant of. You know, like, we're moving with people one day. Just because they are allies at one point doesn't mean they're going to be our allies forever. And we shouldn't always be willing to share the same title with those people. I really fear that we're going to confuse a lot of people as to what it is that we are actually trying to achieve.
For myself,
When we look at this in regards to this show, one of the purposes of this show was to engage into the dialogue, but not to engage the dialogue, but take a lot of that dialogue offline and put certain things into action. Where brothers can meet face to face, brothers can meet on other platforms, put a lot of things into action in regards to solutions. In regards to a lot of the situations that we face, such as political prisoner, mass incarceration, the developments in the streets and education in the streets, other things of that nature, right? And also at that time, we got like 5 minutes left, right? And I like everybody to get their final thoughts.
I just want to send a shout out to everybody that's behind the wall. Keep their struggle alive, man. Stay new African. Stay strong. And whenever you see more than two police gather together, black man life is in danger, man. So be with
you. All right. All right. Go ahead, Bombside, Baba G2.
Okay, well, I guess I'll speak up. I agree with part of the conversation that we were having offline is using this platform to further education, further commitments and activities beyond just listening to GJU. I mean, GJU puts out a lot of valuable information. It has a lot of people that have been participants that contribute to the overall mission of liberation and independence. But that's something we need to engage in beyond GJU, particularly among our young people. You know, if we can get small formations together just for educational purposes, that's one of the things that we used to do. the back door is we provide information, but provide a space for them to learn. And then once they've learned a certain amount of information, you take that and you apply it to your commitment to work with other formations, creating your own. But we need to spread this word among our young people. They're our future. Those are the warriors that will either make or break this prison industrial complex or prison industrial slave complex. And so it becomes incumbent upon them to get that knowledge and keep this moving pushed forward.
Okay, along with me agreeing with what Brother Yeetu just said and what was said previously, I want to suggest this, folks, go online if you haven't already. Check out our Rebuild publication, the Rebuild website. You can get a link to the latest editions of Rebuild. Rebuild, and you can also get some links to some prior material related to the independence movement and the struggle of our people. That's the Rebuild Collective, Rebuild Publications. And along with that, I would say, assalamu alaikum to all free the land.
Okay. Scar, you got any final thoughts, good comrade?
Hey, strong love and push, man, for the people, man. All about the people. It's for the people, man. It's power of the people. With that said, I sign off.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Again, I appreciate all y'all comrades, man, for taking time with y'all schedule, man, seeing that we're understanding. And it's been a beautiful dialogue, man, especially the brothers up on the inside, whether the outside, right? And if anyone had any associate comrade loved ones behind the line, look into our website with www.georgejackson.com. It's again www.georgejackson.com. And also, if you're on Instagram, there's a provision of government Republic of New Africa on Instagram page called PG.Republic of New Africa. And if you're on Twitter, there's a Twitter page called Provision of Government Republic of New Africa, Provision of Government Republic of New Africa. Free the land, long live the African people, and long live the tradition.